This is a pre-recorded version of the WTKA Roundtable on WTKA, unsurprisingly. 9 o'clock Thursdays. It is pre-recorded, however, so if you call in, no one will answer. And for that matter, what is the difference between recorded and pre-recorded?
Welcome back inside the MDN studio, Sports Talk 1050, WTK, the ticket online at WTK.com. Unless these guys have comments on Mean Gene Okerlund, I don't think we...
That's after my time.
That's after your time.
Yeah, when I watched pro wrestling as a kid, it was Lord Layton, who was the ringside guy, who was the master of the karate chop, who would occasionally jump in the ring and start whacking
Sounds
people.
Sounds handy.
Yeah,
I do have some comments on Mean Gene.
Okay, Brian Cook, go right ahead.
So type Spencer Hall Okerlund into Google, and you will get a lovely obituary by Spencer Hall. And I agree with all of it. He gave wrestling an air of class and professionalism that it otherwise would have lacked. That's not a joke.
That is a joke. Sorry,
not a joke.
That's a joke.
Well, I know he's not joking, but it's. I mean,
he was a straight man, and like he was a really great straight man.
That's
yeah,
true.
That's true.
And that's something that I think is a little bit underappreciated from content.
Yeah, and one of the things we were talking about this morning. I mean, growing up, if you're in Detroit, you're a baseball fan. Ernie Harwell's the set was your soundtrack of summer, right? And everyone's got Bobby Buford was the soundtrack of fall in Ann Arbor. Well, for many years, for many of us, Mean Gene was the soundtrack of Saturday and Sunday mornings and Miz calling the 900 number because he wanted to get in trouble with his dad. So, but that was, yeah, that was well, a lot of nostalgia flashing back and flooding back in after we heard the news yesterday.
Pro wrestling is important for young boys, I think, in particular. I mean, for me, it was an awakening vis-a-vis reality. I think I told the story when I watched a pro wrestling match in Cleveland on television when I was a kid, and my grandparents lived in Detroit, and so and they had pro wrestling on that night, and in the morning it was the world champion in Cleveland, who was Bobo Brazil, and I went to Detroit and they had a different world champion. I think it was a Sheik or something.
Yep.
And so I thought, hey, I know that Cleveland and Detroit are in different states, but they're in the same world. and so having two different world champions was really distressing for me.
Well, more than
child.
That, because they had regional territories. There were regional territories of the Mid-South and everything else. So, yeah, there were territories across the country. There were probably like a dozen or two dozen like world champions.
Yeah. So that was, as a kid, at least as an 8 or 7 year old, that was distressing to me.
So Haystack Calhoun, was that your era?
I saw Haystack Calhoun. In fact, I think I have a program or a poster of Haystack Calhoun in a three-way tag team with Pedro Morales, who was the champion of the world in Boston.
Okay,
and
Haystack
Calhoun was the 632 pounds, it says on the poster, was the referee.
Because we had an email from a guy who was talking about when he was a kid, Leapin' Larry Shane, the Sheik, Leapin' and Haystack Calhoun. So yeah. More your era as Mean Gene came in after that. All right, there you go.
Although I watched a little bit just because it's camp, you know, it's funny.
Sure. Little wrestling to get us going here on the Michigan on the roundtable here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTK. The ticket online at WTK.com. What Ed is missing, he's gonna regret missing that conversation.
Ed's numbers probably give Mean Gene a 2% chance of coming back to life.
That's funny.
So let's jump right into basketball here as we're heading back into Big Ten basketball play. The Wolverines obviously had the two games back in December about a month ago to start Big Ten play. But now Big Ten back underway in earnest. Really entertaining game between Nebraska and Maryland last night. Not so much between Michigan State and Northwestern. But it's nice to get Big Ten basketball back. And, of course, tonight, Craig, back at the Chrysler Center. And coming off those last couple games, it seems like the Big Ten game started to seem like they're ramping back up. Because it almost seemed like they ramped down a little bit against Western and Air Force.
I'm not sure. You know, the thing then, and Brian and I talked about this in a long and perhaps tedious to some basketball conversation on Monday for his site, was, you know, both Air Force and Binghamton zoned. They were slightly different zones, but they were still more or less similar zones. And in the Air Force game, we came out, we couldn't make a three, we were 1 for 9,
And basically clean looks on all of them.
Yes. Yeah, good looks. And so they hung with their zone the whole game, I think, pretty much. In fact, I think they did.
They did.
And then at one point, Michigan had a 9-of-20 streak before garbage time and ended up pulling the game away. But Air Force wasn't inclined to give Michigan much in the paint, or at least they were going to contest in the paint. Binghamton made a very different decision. They said Michigan came out making threes, but in fact, I think they made it.
And some deep ones, too. Jordan Poole.
Yeah, 11 of 18 on the game. But Binghamton said, we're going to give you the 10, 12, 13-footer, and we're not even going to contest it.
And it was a trap.
And Brian and I had a little disagreement about this, and Beeline.
In theory, you want to. That's the shot you want to force, is something that's not at the rim and not at the three-point line,
that's
right?
That's Brian's point.
So, and the thing about Binghamton is they were playing so far off the guy in the mid-post that when Iggy was like, I can take a dribble here, and that happened like 30 minutes into the game, he was like, I can take a dribble here. He got to the rim and then scored. So
there were a couple times early in the game, Iggy turned around, and I'm like, I don't think he realizes how open he is that he should go closer to the hoop, right. And he missed like free throw line type jumpers.
By a foot or two.
Some of them. And Matthew, like, I don't think they really practiced that shot very much. Everybody, like, I know Matthews has it. I know Teske has it a little bit. But you are talking about guys that are bad free throw shooters shooting from the free throw line, and they're not, they don't get a free throw. They have to take a jumper. So to me, those are not great shots. Like, if it's 8 seconds left on the shot clock and that's all you get in that possession, all right, fine. That's not the worst thing in the world. But, like, to start taking those with 15 seconds on the clock when they're inviting you to dribble into the
rim. Coach Beilein, of course, disagreed. He thought...
He said on TV, like, I can't get these guys better shots. And I'm like,
they did also miss some bunnies. I mean, they missed some layups in there, too. So it wasn't that all the missed twos were in mid-range game.
A lot of them were.
But it wasn't like the Western game. Western, I went back and tracked. They were 10 of 30 from the rim. In this one, I went back last night and rewatched. They were 4 of 27 in that range.
In the mid-range.
In that mid-range. And they...
4 of 27. That's worse than it was on our podcast.
Yeah, well, I went back and watched them all.
Again? Oh, 4 of 27.
4 of 27. And Teske made 2 and Livers made 2, and that was it. And they were just such good looks. I mean, those were looks
How
I would
How can they
want.
Be good looks if you're 4 of 27?
Because they were good looks. Because they were...
If you're wide open at the top of the key, is it a good look?
These weren't the top of the key.
Oh, no, I know. But if you had an open look at the top of the key.
That's a three-pointer.
Yeah, and it's a but what if it doesn't go in? It's still a good look.
Sure, but those weren't good looks because they were 4 of 27.
But you could be 0 of 10 from the top of the key as a team, and you could be wide open.
Is a three-pointer from Jan Jagla a good look? No. Michigan is a team of people who don't shoot very well from the free throw line.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the big question is, will we see more of this? And most of the Big Ten is man. They don't play a whole lot of zone.
You'll see zone tonight.
Yeah, that was a speculation. Penn State is a man team, but
they have zone wrinkles. Yeah.
So we'll see what they do. Penn State, if you want to go there, I don't think is the world's greatest team, but they're still a top 50 team on KenPom. They're a really good defensive team in man. And so I wonder why you would get away from your strength and do something that you
I think it depends on the on the matchups. And we'll get into Penn State.
Mm-hmm. I hate watching Michigan play zone teams, so that's why you do it. Because it gets them out of the flow of their offense.
Right. We actually talked about this in a different context yesterday, but yeah, how many motions and different things does John Beilein have against man-to-man for his offense? He's got all these different looks and this, that, and the other, and things that they can do against man-to-man. Against zone, you have limited options of what you can do, so it looks more about passing around and finding the guy at the entry point. And it looked like they started, as you mentioned, Brian, they started to get comfortable. Get the ball to Iggy at the high post, and if he's wide open, let him get to the lane. If not, he made was it maybe Livers? There was a touch pass, I want to say, to Matthews for a drive and a dunk on the side. Just if you can get the quick pass, like going back to 13 when they had Mitch McGarry doing the quick entry and get it back out to somebody else, you can get good looks against a zone.
Well, I mean, they weren't really collapsing down on the mid post at all. So there was that period kind of 10 minutes in where Michigan was able to get 3 or 4 dunks off of
from the high post
from
the
high post like to the baseline, and then Binghamton's like, all right, we're gonna take that away.
Yeah,
and then it was just we're gonna leave this guy wide open from 10 feet and hope that they miss, and they did. And I feel like, you know, these days in practice, what are you doing? You're getting to the rim, you're taking threes in that kind of mid-range. is not very emphasized. So,
but if you're going to play teams that will zone you, I'm guessing they'll spend a little more time prepping that play, that shot, because if it's going to be available to you, then you want to practice it.
I mean, I guess I'd prefer them to be.
I think we'd all, yeah, you want to get to the rim, you want to get good looks at three, but there are going to be times where if you're at the free throw line and you're wide open, you better put the ball in the basket.
Sure, but that shouldn't be your
the go-to.
Right.
But like, it needs to be a part of it.
Find yourself wide open from that distance.
I mean, those are shots that we talked about this, that if you make half of them, you're fine. And those are shots where you should. Right. I mean,
and
these are skilled guys.
Yeah, they should make half
of those shots.
Having 1 point per possession is not something to shoot for.
I'm not saying that. I'm just saying if you're making half, you're all right. And really, the truth is you should be making more than half, because a good high school team is going to make half of wide open shots from 10 or 12 feet. And so, to me, I agree.
427. I feel that is dispositive to your assertion.
Sample size.
I know there's a sample size issue, but 27 is not an insignificant sample size.
I hear you. We'll see, I guess. But I do agree that we're going to see some more of this, even with teams who aren't perhaps.
I think teams will zone Michigan just to make them. I think the reason why most teams play zone to make you feel more uncomfortable. Nebraska's going to play zone. Heck, Nebraska didn't come out of their 1-3-1 last night in the last possession when they should have, and it gave Maryland a pretty easy look to win the game.
1-3-1, I mean, when Michigan played the 1-3-1 and we went out and played, who was it, in New York? Buzz Williams' team in New York. It wasn't.
Oh, Marquette? Good.
Marquette. All they did was attack that from the side. Side to post, back door, bang, bang, bang. It was a layup drill. That was the end of the 1-3-1 for John Beilein, because the next night I think Alabama did the same thing. And until then, teams have tried. You can't attack that thing from the top. You got to go to the wing, to the post, to the back door, and it's easy for a good team.
Nebraska should have been in it late in the game last night.
So I didn't see the game last night.
It was a really close game.
It was at Maryland.
Yeah, it was at Maryland. It was a close game. Nebraska ends up losing. Maryland hit a shot. They have a freshman. They have two 6'10 guys that start that are very athletic, and the freshman of the two hit a nice shot. And I bring up Nebraska because we are going to see zone down the road. In the matchup against Penn State, I find this team to be really fascinating, because obviously we know that generally Michigan plays, in the last 13 matchups, Michigan's won 12 of the 13, and 8 of those 13, or 8 of the 12 have been single digits. So 9 of the last 13 times they've played, Michigan's either lost or they've been in single digits against Penn State, even though they've won 7 in a row at home, and they've won like 13 or 14, whatever it is. But the games are close. Penn State has guys, they don't have a lot of guys, but they've got their top three players. The big man, Stevens. Stevens, the big man. Lamar Stevens, the 6'8", 230 kid that's averaging 18 and 10 or whatever.
Watkins is 6'9".
He's their four.
So he's their four, but the three main, like the scoring guys. So you have Stevens is a terrific player. His 2-point shooting can be. But he scores 20 points almost every game.
He is a physical guy. He's not going to step out and hit a three.
Right. He shoots 17% from three.
Well, he was 32% last year, so he's more of a jump shooter. He reminds me of Nigel Hayes from Wisconsin a little bit.
Fair comparison.
Better free throw shooter. He's 75% from the line.
Well, he's a good at bad shots guy, where he takes a lot of 2-point jumpers, and he's pretty good at canning them, but he's not an efficient offensive player. So he's at 30% usage, and he absolutely should not be at 30% usage, but Penn State has no choice. So he gets a lot of bad shots up because he has to, a lot of late clock shots up. And so you see it in his 3-point percentage, which has gone down considerably from last year.
And his overall shooting percentage, when you're 6'8", 230, you should not be shooting like 42%.
Well, he's a jump shooter.
But, yeah, he's not taking shots at the rim routinely.
So obviously he's a guy you have to keep your eye on. A Philadelphia guy, as Beilein said, Philadelphia guys just go out and make buckets. And which there is some truth to that. Not totally true, but some truth to that. Reeves, the point guard, is a really interesting matchup. 6'5". He's 6'5". He's long. He leads the league in steals. Yeah, he's not a great offensive player, but he scores 10 points a game.
He's not a point guard, though.
Yeah, they use him. He'll handle the ball some, but he's not really a point. The problem with this team,
this team doesn't have a point guard.
Point guard by necessity.
Right, yeah. So, like, they don't have a guy like X who's going to get 10 assists in the game. They don't have a guy.
Right, he only has, like, three. I think he averaged, like, three a game.
Right, and, like, they have guys with high turnover rates because Reeves' turnover rate has really spiked this year, so it's gone up 10 points. And that's because, like Stevens, he's a really good 3-and-D guy. Like, he was, like, 38% last year from three. He was a really efficient player, and he does have a top 20 steal rate the last 3 years. So he's a guy who you can put on the wing, and he can really bother someone. But when you heap offensive responsibility on him like Penn State has done.
Yeah, they are definitely deficient offensively. The one guy that just don't lose is Bolton, the freshman. Well, I mean, he shoots 40-some percent from three. He's just a three-point. He's got more threes than twos.
Yeah, I was going to go there because, I mean, they're back. Even though they've got the three guys, and I think Reeves is more of a wing guy, certainly, than he is a guard. Yeah,
he's a 6'5 longer.
Yeah, I mean, but they're playing three freshmen in the one and two spot, essentially. Bolton, Miles Dredd, and a guy named Myron Jones.
It's a great name.
Yeah, Miles Dredd. Yeah. So and Bolton, you're right, is a good three. He shoots 44% from three. He's a great free throw shooter. I think he's almost 90% from the line. But he's
run him off the line.
Yeah, he's, you know, I counted up his assists and turnovers, and he's got 18 assists this year and 35 turnovers. And
it's a freshman, he's a freshman shooter.
And for a guy in the backcourt, that's dreadful. And Dredd is also dreadful in these numbers. So
both of them can shoot, but they're not really creators.
Right.
And that Penn State.
Right. Just don't lose Bolton. No. He's gonna run around. Don't lose him.
Yeah, I think Bolton, I mean, may have some trouble with X. That this is the kind of guy who X could devour in this game. So that poses some problem for Penn State. You know, but it's not like Penn State can't win this game. They've got three good experienced guys, as you point out, and they can shoot.
Big Ten games earlier this year were pretty close. So
correct.
They lost to Indiana by two, I believe, and that's Maryland by seven.
Something like that, yeah.
That was a tight game. And, you know, they beat Virginia Tech, which is, and they're 12-1, so they're the one. But they have also lost to DePaul and
Bradley.
Right, yeah, they're Maryland, very uneven schedule.
North Carolina State they had, and they're top 20 teams.
They were missing Watkins for their first five games because he had some off-season incidents and then some mental health issues. So the loss to DePaul was close, and they didn't have Watkins. The loss to Bradley was close.
Yeah, DePaul was overtime.
But those losses, I mean, it's going to be tough for them to make any sort of case that they should be in the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, no, and we'll talk about this in the next segment. We'll take a break. We can look at the numbers because the Big Ten is really deep.
Yeah.
It's not 11. In theory, it could be as deep as 11. They won't be 11 in the tournament, but there are 11 teams that think that they're in that conversation. That's a really deep league. The only, the ACC would be a league that could have an argument like that in general. So I don't think any of us are predicting a loss tonight, but I do think it, at least through like that beginning, middle part of the second half, I do expect the game to be within reach because both teams are pretty good defense. Michigan better, but both teams are pretty good defensively. And if Michigan cannot turn the ball over, that I think will be. Although I guess it got a little worse in the last couple of games, but Michigan not turning the ball over against a Penn State team that likes to get the turnovers will help Michigan create the larger disparity. And then, of course, just hitting some shots, the ones that don't go, 4 of 27?
Yeah, for Michigan, I mean, really, for Michigan, the name of the game is shooting because really everything else they do pretty well. And shooting is in and out, and that's how I see it. But Michigan should win, right? I think Ken Pom has us at 85%. That's pretty good.
Yeah, favored by 11, so it should be a pretty good outing. It's a nice kind of easing back into Big Ten play, getting home game against Penn State.
Yeah, I like how I don't necessarily love having the last two games of the Big Ten season both being on the road, but I'm not unhappy that these opening games of the Big Ten season are reopening the Big Ten season at home to get your feet wet, get back into rhythm today. And then Indiana obviously is that next big game on the schedule. So we'll talk more about Indiana along with the rest of the Big Ten as we continue to break down Big Ten basketball, Michigan basketball here on the MGO Blog Roundtable.
The Ticket. Michigan Insider Podcast is brought to you in part by defense attorney and WTKA legal insider Joe Simon. Find Joe at themichigandefenders.com.
Welcome back inside the MDN studio, Sports Talk 1050, WTK, The Ticket, online at WTK.com. I do love this time of year because I love the transition into basketball. As a guy that grew up going to basketball games, I love college basketball season. And the Big Ten is actually making it for a fairly easy transition because there are a lot of important games this week. Like Nebraska-Maryland last night, Michigan State-Ohio State on Saturday. Nebraska goes to Iowa this weekend. And Nebraska could fall with another loss in the league, a team that people are considering, you know, a favorite to be in the top six-ish in the league, and they can fall to the Big Ten's jumping right in with a bunch of big games, which makes it fun, of course, Indiana here on Sunday.
Well, I mean, this there's a lot of games that are worth watching. Like, this reminds me of 2014, if you remember that year. Michigan fails to get a share of the title because Jordan Morgan can't quite...
The in-and-out against Indiana at the end.
Just rolls out.
And, like, I was watching a ton of basketball there because the league was so good. That seemed like every night it was like, okay, I should watch that. I should watch Purdue. I should watch Cody Zeller with Indiana. I should watch all these games. And after the non-conference season the Big Ten has, I'm like, yeah, I'm going to put on Penn State Rutgers. That could be interesting.
It could be.
But you're right. Yeah. You know, I was going through the list, and it's just the way they're listed out because Michigan State's the first team to win the third Big Ten game. But Michigan State, Michigan, Ohio State, Indiana, Wisconsin, Maryland, Minnesota, Purdue, Nebraska, Iowa – and you throw in Northwestern at 9-5, they're 0-3 in the league right now, but they've played Michigan State, Michigan, and there was, I think it was maybe Maryland in there. But those are all teams, and I think Northwestern being the one on the most periphery, but that's 11 teams in a 14-team league that are all have aspirations.
Right.
And think about, you're not going to get all of them twice, but you're going to get now that you're going to 20 games, you're going to get more of these teams twice. You're going to play all these. The schedules are tough. You go team by team in the league and say, well, when's your moment to kind of catch up and get that win because you need an extra win, and then all of a sudden you have four more ranked teams coming up. Are you guys, Brian, do you expect a pillaging of each other almost? Like, will there not be a one or a two seed out of the Big Ten because they're so good?
There will be a one.
Will the cream rise to the...
Like, you know, KenPom, I think, has Michigan going 15-5 in the league, which is clear one seed territory given their non-conference schedule. So,
because that'll be 12 more. That's like 12-5 from...
That's 12,
13-5 from now.
13-5
from now.
Which doesn't even sound that good.
So it's just 26-5. Yeah. I mean, what happens elsewhere in the country doesn't matter, but 26-5 when you're going 15-5 in the Big Ten, and I mean, I guess who those five are and where they are does matter, but if you're going 15-5 in the Big Ten, this Big Ten, that's really good, right? That's your point.
I mean, Bart Torvik has a site where you can project, like, what happens if this happens and this happens and this happens. And it's really hard to get Michigan off the two line, like, below the two line. It's pretty easy to get them on the one line where they're projected right now. But, like, I've been, like, putting in results, and, like, Michigan goes 12-8 in the Big Ten, still on the two line. So that's maybe a little bit optimistic because I think that the committee would probably be like, okay, they're scuffling, we're going to put them on the three line, whatever. So the number of good teams in the league and the, like, credit Michigan is already banked. Has them in a really good spot.
Yeah, yeah, when Carolina beats Gonzaga, we cheer, right? I mean, it's kind of weird, but you want to watch Villanova and North Carolina play well all the rest of the year.
Yeah, Villanova.
I'm not saying they will, but you want them to.
There's a couple teams, particularly Providence, is a team Michigan should be rooting for because they've got some good wins. They're playing pretty well. I think they're a bubble NCAA team right now. Yeah. So. So not just big teams.
Like, you know, even, and I'm not saying that they're going to be in this position, but as MAC play begins, you want to root for Western Michigan to win the MAC.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not saying it's going to move the needle a lot. Yeah. I'm not saying
Buffalo
they will.
Buffalo is going to win the MAC.
I get that, but you want to see the teams that you've played win as much as possible.
Sure.
It does help the things that you're talking about. If you go 12-8, but all the teams that you played won all their big games, that makes your 12-8 doesn't hurt as much because you have these great wins against Carolina.
We should focus on not going 12-8.
Well, I also don't expect Michigan to go 12-8.
So Michigan could win about, you know, 60% of their games going forward and still be in a really good spot come tournament time.
Yeah, I mean that's absolutely true. It's interesting. Did Penn State win the NIT last year?
They won the NIT last year.
And it strikes me that if you're a fan of a team that won the NCAA in the prior year and you've got
NIT?
NIT, excuse me. And you've got three key guys coming back, experienced guys. You're saying, hey, we're going to be in the NCAAs next year. I kind of doubt Penn State is making it. And I assume they're one of the three teams you're talking
about.
Correct.
It's because it's 7-6. They need to have a great conference schedule. And again, there are opportunities for everyone but Illinois, who's at 4-9, the only team that's below 500. There are not that Rutgers or Penn State are going to go out and beat Michigan twice and Michigan State twice or whatever, but this league does provide everybody in the league opportunities to make a name for themselves at obviously somebody else's expense. I just don't see enough of those for Penn State to come out on top of enough of those, or Rutgers to come out on top of enough of those. And Illinois is just a bad team this year again. And those are the three teams at the bottom. But yeah. Everybody else, you know, Michigan goes to Northwestern. That's a tough venue. Michigan goes in there, got that one. I'm glad that game's over. They don't have to go back to that place anymore. The other play, Indiana twice in January, that game in Bloomington later in this month, maybe the opportunity for a 17-0 team to, you know, stay unscathed. But going to Bloomington is not exactly easy. Losses do happen in basketball.
Yeah, I mean, let's talk, if we could, a little bit about Indiana. I think they're 11-2, and their defense is stepped up this year. They're a top 20 defensive team. They've got a great freshman in Romeo Langford, who will be, I assume, a lateral pick next year.
Yep, 17-5 a game.
But he's an interesting guy because he shoots 62% from two, and 62% plus from two, and against most teams has found it pretty easy to get to the hole. He also has a pretty good mid-range game, but he can't shoot it from three at all.
Yeah, 10 of 47 on the year.
Yeah, and so I wonder I assume Charles Matthews will be trying to check him on Sunday, and that'll be sort of, I think, the key to that game, whether they can keep Langford away from the rim without fouling him. And he's a great free throw shooter. So they also, of course, they have Juwan Morgan, who's a terrific player.
So are they a two-person team and then parts around them?
Mm-hmm. Well, they have a freshman point guard named Rob Thittacy, who's done pretty decently, but definitely a third banana type right now. And, you know, the interesting thing about Juwan Morgan is they list him at 6'8". Man, it's probably not.
He's probably not. So he's got tall hair.
He does have tall hair. So this is going to be interesting from the perspective of, like, okay, John Teske has a much smaller player, but he's still a post guy. This will be kind of a, not only important for the Indiana game, but like a preview of Nick Ward versus Teske. And, you know, same with Ethan Happ. So Wisconsin took a loss to Western Kentucky, and that's like, oh, that's really bad.
But you should talk about Western Kentucky. Yeah.
Western Kentucky has one of the weirdest recruits in the country, Charles Bassey. If you watched Ignis play in the USA versus the World game, he was on the World team. He's a Nigerian kid. And I was like, who's this guy? He's really good. And I was like, oh, he's uncommitted. Where's he going to go? And I followed his recruitment, and he went to Western Kentucky. So they have a 6'11 elite defensive center. Ethan Happ goes 9 of 23 from 2 in that game. And, like, he's got 45% usage because Western Kentucky is like, all right, Happ's going to get what he gets. And we're going to shut off the rest of these guys because they're not really drivers. And that was a good gamble. They won that game. So if Teske can approximate that, you know, not get every bucket swatted, but, you know, just force him into a bad night, you know, I think Michigan can definitely win, even at the Troll Center where they will be headed.
Yeah, that's interesting. Wisconsin, you can't really effectively double team Happ.
No.
Happ is on KenPom is their number one player in the country right now, and you can't double team him because he's such a superior passer.
Great passer.
And
they have shooters everywhere.
And they've got Trice, and they've got
Davidson.
And so unless they're on a cold night, you really can't afford to double team in the post. And so I was stunned when Brian talked about this before, that this guy at Western Kentucky one-on-one was able to limit Happ, and that's what Michigan's going to have to do. I agree. And it'll be interesting to see what Teske can do against Juwan Morgan. Of course, it may not be a mismatch for Isaiah Livers.
No, it won't be.
And so they do have that.
And they keep talking about when they play smaller teams, the opportunity to get more minutes for Brandon Johns. I don't know what his readiness truly is, but if they're going to play teams that are...
His readiness is if there's foul trouble.
Yeah.
And that's the other thing.
At some point in time, we've seen it happen where the freshman, and not saying you're going to give him 25, 30 minutes, but that the light bulb switches enough that all of a sudden you're getting 10, 15 really good minutes out of a kid as opposed to playing him because you have no choice because you have foul trouble and you better get someone on the floor.
Yeah, I think that's what's going to be. The other thing about Happ is he's like a 50% free throw shooter.
Yeah,
so
it's
like,
terrible.
So you can put Big Country on him for a few minutes and let him bang on him. And right, if you pick up a few fouls, you don't worry about it. And if you send him to the line, you say, beat me at the line.
Right. Like if Austin Davis fouls out in 8 minutes against Wisconsin, that's a job well done.
So what you're saying, essentially, a big thing with Happ, and who's had a great season at this point, is be physical with him. and have a law and have some length. You needed some length on them, which Western Kentucky, of all schools, Western Kentucky had. But how many schools across the country have John Teske size and then an Austin Davis size kind of guy coming off the bench that you can, you said, give me 5,000, 8 minutes? Not many.
A lot of teams have 6'11", 7 foot. Teske's probably 7'1", but not many of them can move their feet as well as Teske. Yeah. And so that's the deal. But whether he can match with Hap one-on-one will, in those games, will be a big issue. And I think in the Indiana game on Sunday, the big issue is going to be, you know, can we keep Langford away from the basket? He's phenomenal taking on that first step, getting the ball to the hole. If you can sort of keep him away from the basket, you have a chance to beat them. But if he's just taking it to the rack over and over. Now, they struggled both with Northwestern. And who else, Brian? Did they've got two
they struggled, I think, with Maryland?
Penn State. Yeah. So they beat Northwestern at home by two, and they
a lot of close games on Indiana's schedule
right,
this year.
And they beat Penn State by two at Penn State. So yeah, they've been lucky. They beat their last game out or two games ago, Butler. LaVal Jordan's team, they beat them on a last second shot.
It was a couple games ago on the 15th. Since then, they beat Central Arkansas in a blowout, and they beat Jacksonville in a blowout.
Okay.
They actually play. If you want to get an advanced look at Indiana, tape on FS1 tonight at 7 o'clock, the Illinois-Indiana game, because, of course, the Michigan game is also at 7 o'clock, and then you can watch that game after Illinois-Indiana play tonight, and that way that's a preview of the game coming up.
Is that at Indiana or at
the game Illinois? Is at Illinois. Right. No, sorry, the game is at Indiana. Okay. Yeah, at Indiana. So yeah,
probably not gonna.
And the fact is, actually, that game. That tape. If you watch that game tonight, that's Michigan's after tonight. That's their next two opponents. So you could actually see Indiana and Illinois. They're playing against each other. A little scout of your next two opponents. So a little more college basketball and more with these guys. We continue inside of the break. Craig Ross is here. Ed Fang is in Chicago. Brian Cook is here. This is the Michigan Insider Sports Talk 1050 WTK. The ticket. A little more hoops and maybe some other conversations still to go here with the MGO Blog Roundtable. Craig and Brian are here with me for a few more minutes on the Michigan Insider Sports Talk 1050 WTK. The ticket online at WTK.com. I spent the break. I'm going to try to convince Craig to join me at the convo tomorrow night to go see Eastern Michigan take on Buffalo, number 20 20th ranked Buffalo team.
Yeah.
As they come in here to play a game at 9 o'clock on a Friday night. It's the Big Al and Romulus special. I'm going to head on over there, and if you can't make it, you can always watch it on TV if you have CBS Sports Network. WTK alum Ben Holden is calling the game, but I think it'll be a fun game.
Yeah, it should be a good game. I mean, Eastern has played a really tough schedule. They're a really big team, but it hasn't quite worked out for them, especially on offense, I think, so far. But I haven't seen them enough to really know, but... I still think Eastern could even make this a game
Yeah, you too. And I'm just intrigued. I'm curious about Buffalo. I've seen them a little bit, but not a lot. And as we've said, and I've said many times on this show, and I said it a couple times today, I love college basketball. And you tell me that there's a chance, you know, top 20 team is coming in to play at Eastern, and why not take advantage of the opportunity to go to a small venue and go watch the game?
Well, I know I would go over there at the old place at Bowen. When Earl was playing, and in fact, I rarely missed an Earl game except if there was a conflict with Michigan. And there was a game there. I'm sure this is true. Eastern played Wisconsin at Bowen Fieldhouse when Wisconsin had Michael Finley, and the halftime score: Eastern 50, Wisconsin 8. And that's not a joke.
So Eastern actually win the game?
Eastern won the game, although Finley, I think, had 38 points in the second half, and the final was like 108-90, some ridiculous.
They had it closer. Yeah. I only asked because I was at a Penn-Princeton game a bunch of years ago, and Penn had Princeton on the ropes. It was like 30-something-9 at the half, and Penn lost. And it was just one of those methodical clip away. That's why I had to ask that one.
Yeah, well, Wisconsin outscored them massively in the second half, but when you're down 42... you're not going to catch up, but
how could a Michael Finley Wisconsin team only score 8 points in a half?
It's the truth.
He should score 8 points in every half in a game like that. So, if you're around in the area, you're looking for something to do tomorrow night. Eastern Michigan hosting Buffalo for basketball should be entertaining college basketball over there at the Convocation Center. Of course, tonight Michigan versus Penn State. Sunday Michigan versus Indiana. So big stretch for Michigan men's basketball. Then they play Illinois, and then it's the rest of the month of January is. But I guess would this be that this is kind of the point of the earlier conversation too. If you go through Michigan's schedule, I guess you could grab any other team in the Big Ten and say, what does your January look like? Or what does your February look like? And it's pretty brutal.
Yeah.
So I guess we have to take what Jake always says when he calls in: one game, one play, one moment at a time. And in this case, too, because we talk about the Indiana game in addition to the Penn State game.
I have to admit, I don't want to. Do I want to say this?
What?
Michigan in their first eight games.
Oh, no. Don't do it. Well, I mean, yeah, you started it, I guess.
And first eight games was phenomenal. I mean, they were too good. It was like, how do you come out of the gate playing that well? Maybe they were a little lucky. Villanova couldn't shoot anything, and Carolina didn't play a particularly smart game here. But the last four games have been a little bit, I don't want to say shaky, but not as good. I mean, you would have liked to have seen, for example, Brandon Johns get a lot of minutes in these games, but it really couldn't happen because the games were too close. So I don't want to make the analogy with the Rutgers football game, but, you know, teams seem to move one direction or the other. They seem to get better or they get worse. They don't seem to stay the same. I mean, and I have a little sort of back of my head worry. Is this team maybe not progressing? Are they declining? Or is it only that they played so well in the first eight games that there was no other way to, you know, go? Or is it that, you know, the last four games have been against teams that aren't that strong?
And couldn't it be you come out of the gates, play really good basketball, you get into a lull of the season, but also knowing who your coach is, that you're going to have that rebuild, essentially build back up. And it's not like they fell far. They're undefeated. No. But did anybody not expect a little bit of a lull in December? I mean, I expected them to have a lull in December. I didn't expect them to lose the games. They didn't, so that didn't happen. But I didn't expect them to win. You're not going to win every game by 17-plus points, especially now the last couple weren't against good teams. But your lulls happen. Now it's a matter of what do you do when you're ready to come back on the other side of it. And, I mean, Brian, John Beilein seems – when was the last time a healthy John Beilein team did not progress throughout the year?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point. Michigan usually kind of clicks in – in January or February, so if they are able to do that, they'll be pretty, pretty good. I mean, the only thing that gives me a little bit of pause is, you know, the South Carolina game, really, because the defense has been very good for almost the whole year, and then, you know, people are making some shots, like that Flowers kid for Western Michigan.
Yeah, that was a little weird.
A bunch of circus shots. That's fine. But the giving up 77 to South Carolina, it's like, I don't really know about that game, so... And then, you know, they're playing junk zones against minor conference teams, and they're bad at it. And that's a vulnerability that we're going to see, but not that often. So, you know, the stuff that we've seen over the past month is a little bit concerning, but I don't think it's something that really...
I mean, yeah. And we have, I mean, Michigan has, what are they, 27-1 in their last 28 games?
Something like that, yeah.
I think that's pretty reasonable. And so it would be typical of Michigan fans / me to whine about a team that's, you know, 27-1. And a lot of those games were, you know, against teams that could really play.
And there were good learning experiences in there, because especially it's great to learn those when you win. But like when you watch, not that they haven't played Michigan State, you know, 2-3 whatever times a year, however many years in a row now, but you play North Carolina early in the year and you watch how fast Carolina off makes and misses and wants to get down the floor. Well, you get smacked upside the head that first time you had that happen by Michigan, you know, when you're getting ready for Michigan State. You're like, remember the Carolina game and how we played and how quickly you got back? So you take that lesson. And then you're talking about the junk zones that they were playing. I'm pretty confident whether it's in a Big Ten game or if it's in an NCAA game or something, they're going to face some of those things again, just because teams copycat, just like in any other sport, right? So if things were working, well, this team did this against Michigan and they were limiting them. So everyone's going to have the counter to practice against it. So I'm assuming that anything that they did see that kind of affected them, certain kind of zones, that kind of thing, that they will have practiced to get ready to see it again, because someone's going to throw a 2-3, 3-2, or a 1-3-1 at them here or there just to shake things up, even if they're playing a bunch of man-to-man teams. That's the nature of the season, too. I kind of like the schedule that way, too, because you had tough road games, tough road environments that you don't always get. I mean, has Duke even played a road game yet? I think this is now when they're going to play a road game in league play. Yeah. So they've got tough road games, you know, under your belt for especially the younger guys. You've had different types of play of teams that you're playing under your belt. And now you jump into a full feet, 2 feet, jumping in and Big Ten season.
Well, I mean, a couple things that Michigan has done routinely well this year has been getting back in transition defense. I haven't seen maybe once or twice, well, maybe more than that, but not often this year have they had trouble in transition defense. The other thing they've been really good at and has continued to be solid is the defensive boards. And the third thing is, although they've had a little bit of trouble in some of these games the last month, is turning the ball over. But Michigan's still, I think, number eight, and that's sort of typical for them. So they're not going to turn it over. They're not going to get killed on the boards, and they're going to get back in defense, which means they should be winning games. The games that I worry about are the games where teams come out, play some zones, slow the game down into a sludge bowl, and we don't shoot it. I mean, those are the games where, I see some potential problems, not teams that are trying to beat us back.
Well, I mean, there really isn't a team except maybe Iowa that plays zone as their primary thing. So, you know, that's always going to be something that is not the wheelhouse of the opponent. So, you know, if Michigan can figure a couple things out, they'll be okay enough. And if that is, just have Jordan Poole shoot from NBA range.
Yeah. I mean, that's a good point. I mean, most of the Big Ten teams really are man teams. And so if you're starting to play zone, you're getting out of your comfort zone.
Yeah.
And it's not like Michigan can't rebound on the offensive boards either.
I don't know exactly how the stat has developed yet, but someone put together like a list of NBA threes for certain players in college. It was they were scouting for the NBA. Mm-hmm. And Poole was at like 60% on 23 attempts. And I was like,
Well, we were watching pregame warmups the other day. And so they're shooting on the side in front of us. And Jordan's got, I guess, a manager. And he's, you know, Steph Curry and beyond range, right? And he's just pass, make, pass. And he made like, someone did the count, it was like 19 to 20 or whatever it was. It was some crazy number. And these were all, obviously not contested, it's warmups, but these are all deep threes. And this is all during warmups. It's got to make you feel pretty confident going to the game. And then what happens at the beginning of the Binghamton game, he's shooting the deep threes and they're all dropping. So you see what the practice is for, and it seemed to work. And Michigan does have a guy or two to shoot people out of zones if need be. Well, although Binghamton never came out of the zone, so they just kept shooting over it.
Yeah, well, I mean, you got two other guys who shoot okay from three. I mean, Livers is over 40%. Brazdeikis is 43%. Pardon me?
I thought he was just under, but I guess he...
Iggy is 42.9.
All right.
Actually, I was wrong about Livers. He's 46.5, 46.5.
Yeah.
So you got, and then you have Poole, who's at a ridiculous 50% and started cold. So you've got three guys who really can shoot the three, and then Eli Brooks is at least an average plus three-point shooter. So the team can shoot it against zones.
There's a reason why they're one of the favorites to win the Big Ten. Yeah. You know, they're 13-0 now, and it's them, Michigan, and we'll see how Wisconsin and some of the other teams play behind them. But a team like Nebraska could, by the end of the week, a team that we thought might be in the top four, could have three Big Ten losses before we even get out of the first full week of the second part of Big Ten play.
So that's still a very good team.
Absolutely. If you're 0-3 or 1-3 going into next week, you're in a really tough spot to win the Big Ten regular season title. Real tough spot.
I think 15-5 will win it this year. So
it's possible.
I still think they're in it. That's a really good team. With
that means you have to go 14-2 or whatever down the stretch. That's a tough. That's really tough. Every team in the Big Ten is playing tough schedules because the league is that good. Should be a fun game tonight. Should be a fun game on Sunday. The Big Ten basketball season for the Wolverines. I'll just keep using the same word. It should be fun. These rides with the team have been a lot of fun the last few years. Before we get out of here, guys, do you guys have a prediction on the game on Monday night, the national championship game?
Who's in it?
The two best teams.
All right, I got Oklahoma then.
You mean Alabama and Clemson?
Oh, you mean football?
Yeah, national championship game Monday night.
I predict football will happen.
Yeah, I think Alabama will win this.
You've really
time.
Checked out on football.
Yeah, I mean, I thought we would talk.
I was joking, but yes.
Are we going to talk about the Peach Bowl ever?
Didn't we?
No,
we haven't yet. No,
we should. We can save it for. I mean, can we talk about the Peach Bowl next week, or is it just history?
You two plus Ed and Sam can talk about the Peach Bowl all you guys want.
Because I still want to talk about the Peach Bowl because I went back and watched the first half, and I saw things I didn't think I would see.
The conversation is, and we'll start having these with you guys, obviously. You can use the Peach Bowl and, for that matter, the Ohio State and the rest of the games from the season. But the context of what's next.
What's going to happen.
Looking forward. So we'll definitely do that next week and beyond with you guys. Yeah. I just thought a fun Thursday basketball conversation with you guys to get ready for Big Ten season would be fun on this day. Appreciate you guys coming in, as always.